Chapter 24. As Austin slotted the Jeep into the reserved space in the underground garage, Karina blinked her eyes open. Traces of the drug must have lingered in her bloodstream because she had dozed off within minutes of leaving Benson's house. The last thing she had remembered was the rolling Virginia countryside. She glanced around in bewilderment. "Where are we?" "King Neptune's lair," Austin said with a poker face. He got out of the car and opened the door on the passenger side. He gently took Karina's arm and led her to the nearest elevator, which swooshed them to the main floor. The doors opened and they stepped out into the lobby that formed the centerpiece of the imposing 30-story Numa Tower of tinted green glass in Arlington, Virginia. Karina looked around the atrium with its waterfalls and wall aquariums and the huge globe at the center of the sea-green marble floor. The lobby bustled with activity, much of it having to do with milling tour groups that bristled with cameras. "This is wonderful," she said in wide-eyed wonder. "Welcome to the headquarters of the National Underwater and Marine Agency," Austin said with pride. "This building houses more than 2,000 marine scientists and engineers. The people who work here provide the support for another 3,000 Numa people and ships scattered across the world's oceans." Karina pivoted like a ballerina. "I could stay here all day." "You're not the first one to say that. Now we'll go from the sublime to the ridiculous." They got back in the elevator, which silently rocketed them to another floor. They stepped out into a thickly carpeted corridor and followed it to an unmarked door. Austin ushered her inside his office with an Alphonse and Gaston sweep of his arm. Austin's modest corner space was the antithesis of the sweeping open vista that greeted visitors who came through the front doors of Numa. It was what a real estate salesperson would describe as comfortable but cozy. There was a dark green rug on the floor. Furniture consisted of two chairs, filing cabinet, and a small sofa. A low bookcase held books devoted mostly to technical marine matters and philosophy. The desk could have been measured in square inches, unlike the standard acre-sized centerpiece of most Washington offices. On the wall were photos of Austin with a rugged-looking older man who could have been his twin, but was undoubtedly his father, and pictures of various Numa research vessels. Despite its unprepossessing dimensions, the office had an impressive view of the Potomac River and Washington. "My interior decorator is on vacation," Austin said in apology. He got two bottles of spring water from a small refrigerator, gave one to Karina, and invited her to sit in a chair. He sat at his desk and lifted his water. "Cheers."
"Sante," she said, looking around. "This is not ridiculous at all. It's quite functional and homey."
"Thank you. I share a secretary who takes messages for me. I'm away a lot and don't spend much time here except for special tasks like this one." He took the photographic disc from his pocket and slid it into the computer on his desk. A National Geographic logo came up on the screen, followed by a story headline: "Digging into the past of a forgotten civilization." The headline accompanied an article on the excavation into the Hittite settlement. Austin called up all the photos on the disc. The screen immediately filled with small rectangles arranged in neat rows. Benson had taken hundreds of photos. Austin pushed the album command for 3-second intervals and swiveled the screen so Karina could see the photographs. After a few minutes, Karina pointed to the screen.
"That's it."
The photo on the screen showed several dirt-covered day workers standing at the edge of a pit, shovels in their hands. Nearby was the supervisor, a portly European wearing a pith helmet and unsoiled shorts and shirt. Protruding from the dirt at the bottom of the pit was a conical-shaped mound. Austin went through the sequence of about 2 dozen photos. The series showed the head of the statue being unearthed. Then its shoulders were cleared until the workers were able to get lines under the armpits and hoist it from the hole. The dirt had been cleaned off in later pictures. Benson had taken several close-ups of the face with its smashed-in nose, along with front, back, and side shots.
"It certainly looks like our statue," Karina said. "Unfortunately, this is all we have. A photograph. We're at a dead end."
Austin reached into his pocket and pulled out the figurine he had taken from Benson's fireplace mantle. He set it on the table in front of Karina. "Maybe not." Karina took a deep breath.
"It's a miniature version of the Navigator. Where did you find it?"
"At Benson's house." She picked up the figurine.
"The fact that it exists at all suggests that it was made from the original."
She crinkled her brow.
"From what we know, the statue was shipped from Syria to Baghdad and never saw the light of day. When could this copy have been made?"
Austin reached for his phone. "Let's ask the man who knows." Using directory assistance, he found the name of the hospital nearest to Benson's farm and punched in the number. The receptionist connected him to Benson's room. Austin put the phone on speaker. The photographer answered with a furry hello, but he perked up when Austin identified himself. He said that he suffered a concussion and contusions, but no fractures.
"I'll be out of here in a couple of days. Any word on those bastards?"
"Nothing solid. We wondered where you found the figurine on the mantle, the miniature of the statue you photographed at the Syrian dig. Did someone copy the statue at the excavation site?"
"Nah. That one was shipped off right away. Maybe someone copied it from the other statue."
Austin and Karina exchanged blank looks.
"What other statue?" she said. "We were under the impression that there was only one Navigator."
"Sorry about that. I was going to mention it, but as you know, I was under the weather when you came by the house. There was a second statue. The German guy who was running the Syrian dig said the statues might have guarded the entrance to an important building or tomb. I took some shots of the old boy, but that was before digital. The film got ruined in the blasted heat."
"What happened to the second statue?" Austin said.
"Got me. I went on to another assignment. The Geographic wanted shots of native women with bare breasts, so they sent me to Samoa. A couple of years ago, I was in Istanbul doing a feature on the Ottoman Empire. I found the little figure in a market. The guy who sold it to me was a bandit, but I bought it anyhow."
"Do you remember where the market was?"
"Somewhere in the covered bazaar. Shop had a pile of the statues."
"Damn.
Painkiller's wearing off. Gotta call the nurse. Let me know when you find the creeps who bopped me."
"I will." Austin thanked Benson, told him to stay well, and clicked off. Karina looked as if she were sitting on bedsprings.
"A second statue. We've got to find it."
Austin pictured the sprawling city of Istanbul as he remembered it from an assignment in the Black Sea a couple of years earlier. The covered bazaar spread out over several acres in a bewildering labyrinth of shops. He remembered Zavala's plans for the sub-vet. "We've got a contingent of Numa people going to Istanbul to help survey an ancient port. Joe Zavala could check out the bazaar for us."
"And then what?" Karina said. "What if he finds the dealer? We are here and he is there. What good will that do us?"
Karina had a point. "I'll see if there's a seat on the plane."
"Make that two seats."
She raised her hand to cut short Austin's reply.
"I can be a great help. I know someone in Istanbul who's close to the antiquities market."
She shrugged.
"Well, he is a smuggler, but only of minor artifacts. I've used him on several occasions to go after bigger fish. He knows every crooked dealer in Istanbul. He could save us time. He will only work through me.
Austin gave her proposal a second's thought. It would be pleasant to have the lovely Italian woman as company, but there were other reasons that had nothing to do with male libido. He was concerned about Karina's safety if she were left alone. Trouble seemed to dog the young woman's footsteps. He'd feel better if he could keep an eye on her. Her informant could save a lot of sweat. Karina had successfully tracked down the navigator where others had failed. She was putting on an unnecessary display of persistence, showering Austin with other reasons for her to go, stopping only after he put his finger to his lips. He called Zavala and asked if he had room for two passengers. After a short conversation, Austin hung up and turned to Karina, who had been hanging on every word. "Pack your bags," he said. "The plane is leaving at 8 tonight. I'll drive you to your hotel and pick you up at 5 o'clock. Karina leaned forward and gave Austin a long and lingering kiss that practically curled his toes. "It will be faster if I take a cab. I'll be waiting for you." Seconds later, she was out the door, and he could hear her padding down the hallway. He glanced at his wristwatch. He kept a packed duffel bag ready at all times. All he had to do was grab it and go. On the drive to the boathouse, he called his shared secretary and said he would be away for a few days. Then he called Elwood Nickerson and left a similar message. He didn't go into details. Somehow he didn't feel comfortable telling the Undersecretary of State that the key to heading off an international crisis was a doll-sized figure 5,000 miles away.